County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why this December, we're launching a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's very special episode of TCCP is none other than Gloucestershire and Netherlands fast bowler Paul van Meekeren. So Paul, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket and Dutch cricket as well, as we'll touch upon later in the podcast. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
It's been all right. It's been cold, not the snow that we've had probably up north, which I always enjoy. There's a bit of snow around, but it's been cold. Was in this morning with the Gloucester boys, the usual gym, bit of a bowling session, and that was me done, afternoon off.
Oh, fair enough, Paul. And yeah, what a way to spend it as well, coming onto the County Cricket Podcast for a nice chat about all things cricket. You don't really get much better days than that, to be honest. Maybe a little bit of snow in there would have made it that little bit more special, but hey, it's winds here in the UK, and yeah, you got to enjoy yourself during the wind. So we've had some snow here in Warwickshire, to be fair, today. Not loads, nowhere near as much as up north in Cumbria or Cheshire or Lancs or even Scotland, but it is nice. I must admit, I'm not a massive fan of winter because of the lack of English cricket going on, but we aren't here to talk about the weather, are we, Paul? We're here to talk about the wonderful game of cricket, everyone's favourite sport here on the County Cricket Podcast. So before we get into the chat about county cricket, and of course your time at Durham, Somerset and now Gloucestershire, I want to take it all the way back to the origins of your cricketing journey, Paul. So what are your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
My only memories of very young is just we had a video VCR which had some kind of cricket on it. I'm not sure if it was like funny moments or whatever it was. And then other than that, it was just club cricket. So basically growing up, there was no cricket live on TV. It wasn't in the newspapers. It wasn't even on the radio. So the only cricket I saw was my local first team and my dad playing with the veterans on the Saturday afternoon. So that was sort of my introduction. I grew up sort of playing football and cricket, and we don't play sports in school. So it was like Saturday morning was my own football game, and then my dad would play in the afternoon. So it was like a full day around the football fields where a few of my football mates would go, and then we'd just play around on the side of the football field, play some more footy, and it was basically us from 9 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And the same with the cricket. So cricket was Saturday morning at my games, my trainings during the week, and then either watch my dad play on the Saturday afternoon if timing was right, or he would take me to the first team game when they played at home, watch the first team game. So all my cricketing heroes and the people I sort of really looked up to were just like Saturday afternoon cricketers, because I didn't know any of the other cricketers until I was probably 12, 13, 14, I started to get to know sort of a few of the international players.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because this is something that I want to learn a bit more about on today's podcast episode, and that is the culture of cricket in the Netherlands. Because when I think of Dutch sports, and obviously I'm a cricket fan, so I do think cricket as well when it comes to the country itself, but I think the majority of people look at the Netherlands and immediately you go to football, don't you? They are an iconic football team. You've got hockey, haven't you? That's another thing which the Dutch are very, very good at when it comes to those, you know, those kind of sports. So what was it about cricket, Paul, that actually interested you in the first place? Why didn't you become a football player or a hockey player or go into another sport? What was it about cricket which drew you in the first place?
Just my dad. The way people back home get introduced to cricket is you either have a parent from a cricketing nation. Growing up, that was mainly England, Australia, maybe a lost South African. What we see now back home is a lot of Asian expats coming over. So that's fantastic to see. So it's very diverse now back home compared when it was probably when I grew up. And you know, I think it's only better for the game back home. We get more people playing, or we sort of hopefully start seeing more people playing the game again, and hopefully the talent goes up. But yeah, my dad started playing football as a young kid, like exactly you either play hockey or football growing up back home. And he started playing for a football club. And what you see is a lot of the cricket clubs during the winter are football clubs, or the other way around, a lot of football clubs are cricket clubs. But that was him. So he grew up playing football, gone into cricket, and basically fell in love with both games. So obviously me growing up, football during the winter, cricket during the summer. And I wanted to be a professional football player, I guess, and never thought about going professional with cricket, because that wasn't really anything people actually spoke about. So probably around the age of 12, I was played with a few kids older than myself, because I started a year earlier and I was done with that. I wasn't really enjoying it anymore. So I actually said, somehow this is always, I remember, it's like, I want to stop playing cricket. I went to my parents, I'm done. I don't want to play it anymore. I just want to play football and that's it. And they went like, play one more year. So like, okay, one more year. Probably by the time summer came, I was already forgot that I wanted to stop playing cricket. But I made that Dutch under 12s and basically since then never looked back. Stopped playing football not much later. Did a bit of field hockey as a goalie until sort of the winter trainings were always on a Saturday morning. And the sort of the way sports at age group was that it was on the Saturday morning. So at some stage I couldn't combine it anymore. And then by that stage I fell in love with cricket and picked cricket over any other sport.
Good man. All I'll say, Paul, in retrospect, I think that definitely did pay off, because you're now a county cricketer. You've gone on and represented your country as well. That is an absolutely massive, massive honour. And in fact, I think we'll touch upon that as today's podcast does progress. But you alluded to it there beforehand with regards to the cricket culture of the Netherlands. It's pretty similar, actually, to England then, in that regard, where you have football as your winter sport and cricket as your summer sport. But I want to ask, from your personal opinion, from what you've seen in the country, from having played cricket in the country, from, I don't know, the early 2010s onwards to now, do you think there's been an increase in the number of people in the Netherlands who are playing cricket? Do you think it's become a bit more mainstream? Because if I'm not mistaken, there was actually cricket being shown on Dutch sporting TV for the first time ever, which is absolutely massive. So do you think there has been an increase in popularity? Do you think it's becoming more mainstream? And I suppose the other question, do you think we're going to see more Dutch cricketers coming into county cricket heading into the future?
It's very complicated. This year we played Ireland in a 50 over series, and that was the first time it was live broadcasted via a Dutch TV channel. Actually, back in the days when we started the Champions League cricket, T20 Champions League, that was actually briefly shown on Eurosport back home. So it wasn't really the first time, but first time the Dutch team was sort of had the exposure, and Dutch cricket had the exposure to play live on TV. But I think that the national team has had a lot more exposure, has a lot more, all right, these guys can play cricket. But on the social level and the numbers of cricketers, I think we lost a lot probably many years ago when BBC lost the TV rights. It's sort of, apparently that's been a sort of a trigger moment, which has not been great for Dutch cricket, because people sort of forgot about the game during the winter and then probably gave up on cricket. I think the current lifestyle where everyone is just busy and don't really want to spend a whole day on the weekend or the whole weekends playing one sport, where we see football, hockey, it's just the morning or a part of the afternoon and you still got some time before or after to catch up with other people or just relax. So I think a bit of the lifestyle, it's been a big challenge back home to get the numbers in. Just looking at from what I still follow is that, you know, your first team in the top leagues got 9 or 10 really competitive cricketers, and you almost need one or two guys to fill the final spots. Where when I grew up, we had probably 12 guys who, and so you had one or two guys always fighting for a spot in the team. But that's from the outside looking in. I spoke to Tom de Groot, who played a hand in the 2009 opening game in the T20 World Cup. He actually said that when you're younger, the level of cricket looks a lot higher, but he actually feels like maybe some of the young kids coming through are actually more talented. So it's a bit of a funny balance. I'm not really sure whether... I don't think the game is in a very healthy state. We definitely need more people to play the game. A lot of people, the older people, they feel like it's almost bleeding out a little bit, cricket back home, which is obviously never nice to hear. But hopefully we can find a way to put it back on the map back home. And it might be with like just the T20 league instead of the 50-over league being the... and you can sort of play a knockout 50-over league for the more traditional cricketers. We've never played 2 or 3 day cricket, so we don't even have to start talking about that. But even now the T10 stuff, you know, you might play two T10s on a day or whatever it is. That might be a way to make it more attractive for people playing the game. But at this moment in time, it's not really my worry, I guess. But yeah. It's a bit like, I think the exposure's got more and there's people more writing about Dutch cricket or associate cricket in general. But saying that that means that it's more popular than ever back home, I don't think so. I think about 20 or 30 years ago, it was way more popular and we probably had more people playing the game.
Well, Paul, I know you can't obviously give tremendous detail here, but heading into the future, what do you think could be done in the country itself to reverse that trend? How could we see a rebirth, a renaissance in Dutch cricket per se? Do you think there's anything, strategies, any techniques, anything which could be implemented in order to stop that particular pattern from arising?
I think it's tough because cricket obviously is an awesome game, but it's also quite a hard game to understand. So for kids, I've done a lot of coaching myself. You need someone who loves the game but can make the game very attractive for young kids. And you know, it's not all about about the tactics and you know the mind games that we play. And it's all about maybe smashing the ball for six, which obviously T10 and T20 cricket is all about. And not necessarily all about technique. And I think sometimes when you look at some of the plays, the technique nowadays has gone a little bit out of the window. And you know, if you can hit the ball a mile, you know, perfect. But I think we're lacking a lot of coaches, full-time coaches with a lot of passion and energy. And, you know, I think it's very tough to deliver fun sessions. So I think something like All-Stars Cricket here in the UK is brilliant. Like I've visited a few sessions, like part of the community stuff that you do for a county, and it's just energetic. There's a lot of fun. Kids don't stand still because they don't have to queue up. They've made it very dynamic. I know the Dutch Cricket Board have done something called Cricket for Kids, I believe it's called, which is kind of similar, but I think it's still early on. I think they wanted to launch it and then COVID kind of happened. So obviously they haven't really had the time. I think they just won an award for it. So it sounds like it's pretty exciting, but I haven't seen any of those sessions delivered and what it looks like, but it sounds like it's kind of similar to All-Stars. If they can kick that off and we can get kids coming for an hour session after a football or a hockey training session, because you don't have to do it on a cricket field. You can do it on an artificial field with those kids. So that's brilliant. So if we can get these kids and they can get very enthusiastic about it, and you know, we can keep it dynamic and fun, then you know, that might be a way of getting kids playing the game again. But then you need the games on the Saturday, Sunday, also fun, dynamic, and that's going to be quite a challenge. How can you get kids till 8, 9, 10 very dynamic and, you know, feels like you're always in the game and always participating. And then probably from 10 to 14, or I don't know what the right age group is, then you start teaching them sort of the real 2020 game, where obviously it is not as dynamic as probably a lot of people like, who know their football and know their football and hockey. For us cricket lovers, you know, T20 is unbelievably dynamic and there's always something happening. But try and explain that to sort of the younger generations or the people who don't know cricket as well. So, there's a lot of stuff. It's something I'm quite passionate about, to see how we can get cricket back up. But it's quite hard to do that when you live in the UK. So maybe that's something for me after my cricket days, when I move back to the Netherlands. But at the moment, obviously, I'm in the UK and it's not something I can't really control or help out with. I've given my feedback once about the All-Stars stuff, and I hope they've listened to that. But I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I'll tell you what, the All-Stars program here in England and Wales is absolutely fantastic. It really is. You never hear anything but good stuff about it. In fact, one of my co-hosts, Lucy, she's not on the podcast today, but she's done work with an All-Stars program in Wales. And as you said, it is dynamic, it's exciting, it's entertaining. And the key thing with younger kids who are getting into the game of cricket is to constantly have them in the action. As you said, not focusing too much on technique, the basics, the fundamentals on the game. The key thing is just for them to have fun. And that is something which the All-Stars program definitely does deliver in droves in this country. And Paul, I wanted to ask you about a particular variation of cricket. I'm not sure if you've heard of it before, but have you heard of diamond cricket in the past?
Is that with the four wickets and yeah, they sort of run around? Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I love playing that with the younger kids. So I've do those stuff. It's like, instead of like a game of tip and run where one kid is hitting or two kids are hitting, it's sometimes if you got a big group, it's a perfect way because kids are always ready. They always need to be ready to hit the ball because I'm not telling where I'm throwing. And then obviously the ball's going in all different directions. So I think it's brilliant, but it's hard to make that into probably a competitive game. How would the point system work and all those kind of things? So, I love playing that as a coach and do that with the kids because it's one of those games that's very dynamic, but I'm not sure how you put it in a game, how you make a game or a match out of it.
Yeah, that's the problem. I was really good at that in primary school. I was brilliant at diamond cricket. As soon as it started getting competitive, poor, plummeted right down. Those county hopes just absolutely evaporated in an instant. So who knows, one day the ECB, we might have a diamond cricket league and I might be the Virat Kohli of it. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah. Yeah, fingers crossed. But no, it is an excellent game. And again, it is a key thing to understand. We keep on coming back to this topic, but you know what? It's so, so vital. When you are coaching younger kids, let them have fun and do the basics, the fundamentals. Let that come later, but just get them into the game in the first place. Get them hitting balls, bowling balls, catching as well. And yeah, that is definitely how you inspire the next generation. Talking of the Netherlands, though, in a wider aspect now, Paul, before we get onto our chat about county cricket, Somerset, Durham and Gloucestershire, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the international aspect of it. So your experiences in the Dutch national team, because I love associate cricket. I'm an absolute associate cricket badger, right? And I'm not just talking the Netherlands, Namibia, Scotland, Oman, Nepal, the big ones. I'm talking all the way down to Samoa. Okay, I'm talking about Mongolia. I know the man who brought cricket to Mongolia. It's called Batulga Gombo. He's a former judo champion from Ulaanbaatar. So I absolutely love the associate game. And the Netherlands are one of my favourite teams. I think they're a team which are very, very strong on paper. You've got a lot of county cricketers in there, such as yourself, Paul. I know Ryan Tendershkarta, he's just retired. You've got Logan van Beek. You've got Shane Snater. You've got Tim van der Hoogten. You've got Brandon Glover. There's a lot of talent in that Dutch side. And it was fantastic to see them. I know the World Cup didn't quite go your way this year, but even just to see you in a major tournament, it was fantastic. My question surrounding that team, though, is just for those out there who aren't quite familiar with associate cricket and the problems, I suppose, which can be associated with it. Paul, in your opinion, what do you say is the most difficult aspect of life as an associate cricketer. Is there anything in particular which, I don't know, you could give us a little bit more insight into compared to a four-member nation, you know, like England, India, Australia, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to funding. So sponsors, it's hard to find sponsorships. So basically all the funding we get is from the ICC. So all the income into the Dutch Cricket Board is basically from the ICC. And those fundings are basically, not, I'm not going to say all of it, but the vast majority, and I don't want to say percentage, but it's I would be surprised if it isn't very high. So I'm going to assume it's very high. Is based on the performance of the national men's team, unfortunately. So that means if we go to tournaments and these are cutthroat, if you have won that game, you could lose out on funding for a four-year, five-year period. So when I joined the national team, we went to the 50-over World Cup, which was the World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. And we went to New Zealand for the qualifiers. We had, in the group stage, we had one baddish game against Namibia, which we lost. And we had a real bad game against Kenya. And that meant, I think we lost two out of five games, or two out of two. So we won half. And we didn't make it to the next group, which meant we lost our ODI status. We obviously didn't qualify for the 50-over World Cup. We got relegated to what was called the World Cricket League 2. So we lost out on a lot of funding, which we knew was going to for a period of 4 or 5 years. Then we went to Namibia. We lost against Nepal. We lost against Namibia, but managed to scrape through to the final and get back to Division 1, which then we won over a four-year period. And now we're in the Super League, what's called the Super League, which they just announced that they're not going to prolong. So, which is also a bit disappointing. But it's literally just one game, won that game, which lost you a lot of funding, which then translate to guys losing contracts. And we only have a handful of guys on contracts, which one is actually really full-time. The other ones are pretty much part-time, unless we play a lot of cricket, because they will get a small monthly retainer and then a daily feast when we go on tour, when we have home games, which if you have a consistent year, a consistent amount of games, which I think you're looking at about 120 days a year of matches or tour days, not training days at home, because you don't get paid for that. So if you're not contracted, that's out of your own passion and drive to play for the Dutch team. But it means also you don't get paid until you get selected. So a lot of fringe players who study, have a job, whatever, they travel up and down three times a week. So that's probably about 100 euros in, you're looking at probably 150 euros in travel money every month. And they only get reimbursed for 50 euros of that. So they actually spend a lot of their own money and time in making these national team trainings, knowing that if all the county guys are available, the chances for a fast bowler or maybe even a spinner is quite hard to make a national team. So, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges we face is obviously we have a lot of guys in the county setup, which is fantastic because they train week in, week out. They play on a very high level of cricket. So that's good for the Dutch team, but they're not always available. So you almost, during the summer, you actually sometimes see a very young, inexperienced national team. And during the winter, you see a very experienced team because then the availability, obviously, of the county guys is there, which is a very tough thing to juggle for the balance of the team. So that's because of funding. If we could sign all these county guys on a full-time contract like the ECB does, and I'm not talking about the same amount of money, but, you know, on a good county wage, basically. If that would be a national team contract, and then you can sort out with the counties that they basically on a very minimum contract with the counties, which makes them available for all Dutch games during the summer, means they might miss out on 2 or 3 weeks or maybe a month of cricket with the county, but still play a lot of county cricket But that's the balance, if that makes sense. The money doesn't come in from the ICC, and it's really hard to find a sponsor. So those are probably the biggest challenges, to get income, to pay the players, to pay the people who work in the staff, then to invest in youth cricket, to invest in the women's game. There's so many challenges, and there's only so much funding you get. Like, it's quite crazy because the BCCI in India will get, tens of millions a year, but they make billions by themselves. So if those 10 or 15 million gets taken away from BCCI, they won't even feel that. So if you can spend that money into the social game, and you really want to develop the game and grow the game around the world, you could almost take that money away from a BCCI. Maybe an ECB gets less because they're not really depending on those ICC funds. If you can put that into Dutch cricket, Scottish cricket, Mongolian cricket, whatever you want to do, obviously break it down, you'll see probably a much higher level of cricket around the world. And when then teams come to the World Cup, we probably compete a lot more. I think one of the big challenges this year was that we had a T20 World Cup, and the level of cricket is very, very good. I think Scotland impressed in their group stage, beating Bangladesh. But then they go against the big dogs who've been playing cricket over the last 2 years, and they're struggling because the associates really haven't been playing any cricket for the last 2 years. And I know that's with COVID, but to organize a series in a biosecure bubble is just, cricket for us is expensive as it is to go into it to organize games. But now I have to organize a bubble and all those kind of things. It's pretty tough on the cricket boards and administrators to really have an international program running.
Absolutely, it is. And I know this series has just been postponed now officially, but the Netherlands-South Africa series. Now, what I was seeing on social media over the weekend, actually, this was, we're recording this on the Monday, by the way, listeners. But what I saw a lot on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram was people saying, why don't the Netherlands just get a chartered flight out of South Africa, play the series, and then get a chartered flight out? The key thing there, it costs an absolute fortune. I don't think people realise just how much it costs. Paul, it's not financially viable, is it, Paul?
No, definitely not. I mean, it was a tough decision, and it looks like the guys can't really fly out before the tickets they had booked. But there was so much, not panic, but there was so many distractions now going on that it wouldn't be fair for the guys to expect to play and compete at a high level. So it was a completely fair call to either postpone, or I'm not even sure if they postponed the games or cancel it. I think they're still sort of trying to figure out if there's a window that we can travel again. So that's incredibly tough, especially when they're now basically stuck in the hotel and they can't really leave. So, but yeah, it's not as easy to just get a chartered flight, put the guys on and fly out. So it's a very tough situation where they're in now. From what I hear is that the Dutch cricket board has been working very hard to get the guys home and very safe, obviously, with all flights almost being denied from South Africa. It's been a tough process, but the communication has been good and clean and clear. So I think that gave a bit of peace to the players, and they're just sort of riding it out at the moment till they can go home. And I think all the quarantining and whatever needs to be done on this side has been organized. So I think that will give a lot of peace and mind to the guys. I think, looking at that first game, I think Dutch were in a real chance and actually maybe causing an upset. Maybe the last few overs, South Africa got a little bit away, but I think for 45 overs of that game, we were actually almost ahead in the game. And I mean, last five overs going for 60 runs or whatever it was isn't too bad. You see that now happening on a very regular occasion. It's not a lot of runs, but it would have been nice if we would have chased 250. It would have made life a bit easy, but I think chasing 277 in a place like Pretoria is very possible. So it would have been nice if we had the whole game on. But the weather obviously played its part, and then COVID did the rest. So that's a bit of a shame. I actually settled in for the second half of the game, and then the rain came. So that was very disappointing. But it is what it is. And hopefully the guys get the chance, or we get the chance as a Dutch team to get back to South Africa maybe next winter and play those last two games.
Well, fingers crossed. We do, of course, remain hopeful that the team can complete that series because, as you said, the men in orange had a massive chance, didn't they? I must admit, in particular, three bowlers. I'm going to mention here two county cricketers and one who isn't a county cricketer or hasn't been just yet. I think you know I'm going to mention here, actually, to be honest, Paul. But Fred Clarkson, who was brilliant in this year's T20 Blast for Kent. Obviously, they went on to win the trophy for the first time in 14 years. He bowled beautifully with a new ball, in particular to Reza Hendricks, so disciplined, so tight and accurate with his line and lengths. Vivian Kingma as well. I know he got a little bit lucky with the full toss. Okay, I did actually discuss that on the South African platform, but I did think he bowled very well. And I know it went a little bit straight at the death, but Brandon Glover as well. He is an absolute speed demon. And you know what, times he finished with figures of 2 for 70 from his 10 overs, but that happens now and again. When you are a real express pace seam bowler and you are a hit the deck bowler, you're going to get carted sometimes. That is just part and parcel of the game. But I thought those three in particular bowled very, very well. And then, as you said, I mean, we only got to see two overs, but Max O'Dowd, he's such an impressive cricketer, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, Fred is probably one of the hardest working guys you ever come across. And he's like, I'm pretty sure he surprised a few people in how far he's brought now. You know, Kent, he's had an unbelievable year, played in 100 a few games. And he deserves all that's coming his way just purely for the time that he spends in his training and the detail. And he just keeps running in and bowling. I mean, a lot of the guys within the Dutch team, I think, around the world can learn from his attitude. Vivian Kingma is a very talented and bowling just comes to him. He's been very unlucky with a few injuries over the last few years. Struggling with the ankle for about 2 or 3 years, he even had surgery, and it looks like that's hauling, and he can now really bowl again. When I came into the Dutch team, me and him came on the scene obviously at the same time, and we were always competing for the last ball as a slower. So it was like he placed one game, probably hasn't done as well as he would have liked, and then I would come in. So we were rooming together, and you know, me and Viv got really close. And Brandon obviously came sort of onto the Dutch team at the World Cup qualifier and blew everyone away. He's got that extra bit of pace. He had probably a frustrating summer with a few injuries here and there. But it's good to see him back bowling quick again. Hopefully he can bring that into the county season and whatever games we got in the second half of the winter. Max, you know, he's one of the probably leading associate bettors at the moment, and probably can, if he gets opportunities, can probably be one of the best bettors in the world, like a Paul Sterling is probably at some stage. We obviously came into the Dutch team, sort of was put into the middle order because there wasn't really any opportunity for him in the top order. And then when that opportunity came for him in that top order, he's just grabbed it both hands and has been dominating for us opening the betting. So He looked in fine touch. He came in. We had a warm-up game where him and Scott Edwards both got 100. So it looked like those two guys were in a bit of form. So, I would have been very interested to watch that second innings. My money was on a Dutch win. So especially even those first two overs, it looked like, and I know it's two overs, but knowing test teams against associate teams, you can almost, after two overs, see like, oh, this is going to be tough, or you know, but they looked so at ease. Maxi especially looked at ease. You know, it wasn't like we were going at one or two over. We scored 11, which, if you know associate cricket really well, sometimes you know you scored 20 odd runs in a power play, and guys go, oh, yeah, well, you know, that's the level. But I just had a feeling that, and from the sounds, the mood it was in the camp, going into the games was so good. Especially after a quite disappointing World Cup, I think there was just that bit of energy and buzz and self-belief that, you know what, we put that away, and now we're going to, you know, you know, South Africa probably chose to rest a few guys because they were tight from bubbles and stuff. And then, you know, we're going to show that we, if they want to do that against a Dutch team, you can't afford doing that. If you want to beat us, you have to play your strongest team and not sort of, I don't want to sound very negative to South Africa, but you can't sort of play a second string team and expect to just walk over us. But yeah, it would have been a very interesting series, I think. And maybe those 52 overs of cricket, maybe cricket South Africa, if we come next winter, they might have to bring their full attack and batting or bowling to make sure they get those crucial points that they need for automatic qualification for the World Cup.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. That is a very, very good point because, as you said, the Super League is being discontinued, but up until, 2023 is the start of that year, there are still points up for grabs. And I think South Africa, if I'm not mistaken, are ninth. So they're actually outside of the qualification so far. So again, we'll have to wait and see. I was looking forward to this series. Obviously, external factors have kind of ruined it. But yeah, when that series does come back, I'll be watching that like an absolute hawk. I will be looking forward to that, to say the very, very least. But yeah, talking of some of those guys then, we've mentioned the likes of Brandon Glover, Fred Clarkson. Another one's Colin Ackerman, a man who in 2019 took 7 for 18 against my beloved Warwickshire at Grace Road. I was there for that match, Paul. That was absolutely horrible for me as a Warwickshire fan. World record figures.
For men's, in men's cricket it is.
In men's cricket, yeah. Not in women's. Go on. Who's the women's one?
It's one of our Dutch ladies who got 7 for as well, for not many. So the world record is in the hold of the women's at the moment. And I'm sure the men want to sort of get that record back. But at least it's in Dutch hands. So I'm definitely not complaining.
Well, I was actually just about to mention that. It is really weird, isn't it? The men's and the women's T20 best ever bowling figures are both held by people from the Netherlands. It is weird, isn't it, that when you think about it? But hey, good bowlers, eh?
Yeah, no, exactly. So, yeah, obviously one is a spinner and the other is a seamer. So it's, I think the record should stick with the seamers. It's harder work for the seamers, so they deserve it. So, no, yeah, hopefully, maybe it's my job to get the record on my hands. No, it's good to see the record in Dutch hands. But, you know, I'm sure that will be broken one day.
Yeah, fingers crossed, hopefully, by a Warwickshire bowler instead of someone against us. And I do just have to, I have to disagree as a spin bowler, Paul. I know I'm being biased, but hey, I want to see it in a spin bowler's hands. That's all I'm saying. Off spin or leg spin, just any spinner out there, get those records back. We need to see an 8-wicket haul in T20 cricket. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but who knows? You know, when I was on that journey to Grace Road on Wednesday, the 7th of August, 2019, I never expect to see 7 for 18. So who knows? We could see an 8 for 2022. Any county cricketers out there, make it happen. That's what I say. But as I was alluding to there, all of those guys have played county cricket. And I think that is a nice way to kind of transition today's conversation into the world of county cricket and the county circuit itself, Paul. So what were your first ever memories of county cricket before playing? I'm talking about not your playing days for Somerset, but do you have any stories? Do you have any memories, per se, of the county circuit before reaching the UK?
No, well, we played as an under 12 at the Taunting King's College Cricket Festival. And then Roland Lefebvre, who is the high performance manager now at the KNCB, who was the youth coach at that time, took us to the Somerset. To the ground, and there were a few guys range hitting. Don't ask me the players who were there and who weren't, but we were allowed to go in the outfield and just throw the balls back. So that was sort of my first introduction. Not my first introduction, but that's what I remember from, you know, going into the county ground. We had like a red and white, which the cricket club played for. We had a tour to Durham. And we actually watched the Durham game, and I still got a picture of me wearing a South Africa shirt, picture taken. I can't even remember what game it was. So that was 2012, I believe. It says on the cap, maybe even longer ago. 2012, I was making my Dutch debut. I was 18. No, that's not right. I think I was 18, 19. 2002 it was, because I was a young'un. I must have been 8, 9 or 10. So that sounds about right, 2002. So I can't even remember what game it was. It must have been about August time. But that's all I remember. And then until then, until I sort of moved to the UK in 2023, I didn't know much about county cricket. I played in the YB40 back in 2013, the last year of the 40-over competition. Played against Kent. There may have been a rained-off game against Warwickshire. I can't even remember where else I played in that series. Oh, we played Warwickshire away. I was on the side. Didn't play. It was 12-ies. So I can't really remember that much of that sort of period. And then my third sort of is sort of since 2016 when I moved to the UK and joined the circuit. But then again, I didn't know anything of it. I didn't really follow it. So there were guys in the Somerset changing room I never heard of, like a James Hildreth. I'd never heard of him before, and he's a bit of a sort of a legend of the game here in the UK. So that sort of sums up my knowledge about the county game. Again, moving to Durham last year, again, you know, South, North, Division 1, Division 2 team, you don't play against each other. So again, since Durham moved to Div 2, guys have come through the ranks. Someone like Potts, Cars, guys who are sort of highly rated as sort of the next generation fast bowlers and all-rounders, guys I've never heard of before. You know, that's sort of my... And I still follow the game a lot more now and watch the games when they're on TV. But you don't watch every game. You don't follow really the scores from up north and all that kind of stuff. So there's so many games, guys, especially at the smaller counties as well, which I've never heard of before, which is quite funny, you know. Even now, there are probably guys I'm like, who? He just joined. No, he's been playing for the last 6 years. I'm like, okay, whatever. And I think that's how the game is a little bit in the UK, especially the Div 1, Div 2, North-South split. I think there are a lot of guys who actually never heard of each other and have never seen each other play and all that kind of stuff, which is quite funny to see.
It most certainly is. And that's our job here on the Counter Cricket Podcast, to provide a bit more insights into those young players coming up through each of the counties and the more established ones as well. For those of you out there who don't know who James Hildreth is, I do highly recommend a Google. He is one of England's greatest ever uncapped players, in my opinion, should have played. So unlucky.
Is he not the greatest uncapped?
There's a debate here on the podcast. And in fact, I'd like to get your opinions on this, Paul. Same with the listeners as well, okay? Because I always say it's James Hildreth. However, there are another two candidates for this. One of them is Darren Stevens, the man, the myth, the legend, the GOAT himself. Yeah. And my Lancastrian co-host, Joe, and he is very biased here, but he says Glenn Chappell, who is from Lancashire. So who do you say out of those three is the best? Would you go with James Hildreth with a little bit of Somerset bias?
So here we go. Glenn Chappell, I couldn't even tell you if it's a better bowler. So that's my knowledge of the game, right? So that's one of those guys. Darren Stevens, obviously, I know he's still around, still playing. And his record is very, very good. But James, I think, for me, James Hildreth or Hildy, I think in my life, 2018, 2019, this list came out of all-time first-class run scorers around the world. It was a top 30, maybe even a top 50. And he was the only player in that list who never played a test game. And he was in the top 20 or something. It was silly. He was high up in the list, top 50, first class run scorers all around the world. And he was the only one on that list who never played a test game. And I think for me, that just for that, he's probably the best cricketer who never played a test cricket for his nation or played international cricket.
I thought that was going to happen. I'm going to be honest. Obviously, there is the Somerset connection as well, but I'm glad you mentioned that stat. I do remember that actually as well. Because the other one on there, one of the most prominent names as well, was Fawad Alam for Pakistan. But he obviously played in 2009 and has since made the move back to playing in their Test cricket team. So Hildreth's definitely up there. If you're a Somerset fan, you're going to say Hildreth. If you're a Kent fan, you're going to say Darren Stevens. Durham fans as well. I mean, someone you'll know very, very well now, Paul, is Chris Rushworth, our 100th, our 100th podcast guest. So he's up there as well. Durham's all-time leading first-class wicket taker. Never played for England somehow. Same with Glenn Chappell for Lancs. He's not their all-time leading first-class wicket taker. That's Brian Statham. But yeah, tell you what, great, great bowler, Glenn Chappell, as my Lancastrian co-host will attest to. But in terms of those days at Somerset then, Paul, what would you say was your highlight from your time down in Taunton? If there was one moment in particular that you could really highlight and pinpoint for us from your time down in the Southwest, what moment would you choose and why?
I would have had, I'm not sure if it was a first-class game in the end, but it was my debut against Pakistan. It was a touring game. And I think we were it was supposed to be a first-class game, and then last minute it got changed. But I think that was my that definitely was my highlight, because I didn't play as much for the first team as I would have liked, because we had a very good bowling attack, and I just never really got my foot in the door, and sort of then once I got opportunity, probably never grabbed it with both hands. I had a few okay games, but not consistent enough. But that that game was unbelievable. Like, a packed Taunton, even if it's Red Bull cricket, you know, the support is unbelievable in the Southwest. Against, you know, Pakistan, getting two early wickets, I think that was sort of a bit of a dream start. And hopefully, unfortunately, it didn't kick on. Obviously, I lost my contract in 2019, but... yeah, that was probably my the best memory of my times at Somerset.
Fair enough. It's a nice moment. And as you rightfully said, the support down in Taunton, one of the best fan bases in the country, in my opinion. Obviously, my beloved Warwickshire, we're up there as well, without a shadow of a doubt. But Somerset, the fans absolutely love cricket down in the Southwest, as do your new county of Gloucestershire. And we'll touch upon them to wrap up today's podcast. But in terms of that contract coming to an end, Paul, would you say that was one of your toughest moments in cricket personally? And I suppose the other question, the follow-up to that was, how did you deal with that disappointment? How did you deal with the disappointment of being released by Somerset itself?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I was basically injured throughout the whole year. I had a very good preseason, and the coaching staff was very positive, and you know, praised me for the stuff I put in. And then I got injured, and we unfortunately got the diagnosis wrong. So I feel like I never got to prove myself, but that's part of professional sports. So you know, it's a bit of a kick in the nuts, so to say, that unfortunately we got the diagnosis wrong. But that's part of professional sports. I probably wasn't the first one, and I probably won't be the last one that it happened to. I felt my time at the club, the way I fitted in, was also a bit over. So I was quite happy to move on. Ideally, I would have moved to a new club, and had offers ready, but that wasn't the case. So. I think the last chat I had with Jason Kerr was, he said, like, you know, you're a fantastic bowler. There are counties where you should easily almost walk into the first team, and you know, you've never really had the run of games to sort of establish yourself as a first team game. So that obviously gives you a bit of motivation and a bit of. The positive mindset that, you know, you belong in county cricket, or that you can compete at county cricket, and that there must be opportunities out there. So my first step was like, what do I need to do to get back into the county game? And for me, that was to leave Somerset and move to the Midlands, as there are so many counties within an hour's drive. So I found a club in Chesterfield, which was awesome. I was looking forward to a good summer of cricket with a lot of second team games, and then COVID happened. So that was a bit of a kick in the nuts. But again, maybe as a cricketer, I'm sure there are a few guys who wanted to have a crack at county cricket in 2020, and sort of COVID stopped it, and they moved to a career outside cricket. But there must be a lot of athletes in different sports who had a very tough 2020. So I played cricket whenever I could. I did about 4 weeks with Leicestershire. I don't need to swap that up with Lancashire, but Leicestershire. And the feedback was very good again. And they were happy to have me back during the winter. And then the second wave, second lockdown came. So I was just trying to stay as fit as I could, I guess, with very limited resources. I did a bit of stuff for Uber Eats to sort of pay the bills. Then someone else reached out, and I did some work for a company called QuickScore, who do it's a software company that does any sports scoreboards. So that was brilliant. Just a bit of sort of working experience for maybe a life after cricket. And he was very supportive. Like, as soon as cricket starts and you're too busy with that, you know, you can leave us again. There's no hard feelings. And so me and him are still in contact. And if there's anything that pops up and I can help him out with, you know, I'm still happy to do that. And then last year, obviously Durham came in. They needed a fast bowler for the 50 over stuff. So that was sort of the plan. And then England needed a second 50 over team because of the COVID outbreak. So then we're like, oh, can you come in for the 3 2020s? I was like, sure, which was just awesome. And I needed that game time because I think until the fourth, I think it was the fourth 50 over game, I really struggled. There wasn't rhythm. I didn't really knew where I was bowling the ball and all that kind of stuff. And luckily, my first game where I actually felt I had a bit of control was against Gloucestershire. So that must have helped a little bit as well. So, that second half of the tournament, I was bowling not as well as I can be, but I was bowling really well. And, it showed in the wickets column. So I kept picking up crucial wickets. Not always outfoxing the batters. Sometimes the batters helping me out there. But, I mean, that's part of the game, especially some of the wickets we played on. Sometimes it had to be a mistake of the batter. So that helped. And then basically since then, Gloucester and myself have been in contact. And then it was just sort of finalising a few bits and pieces. That happened sort of in the last couple of months, and I got going with Gloucester. Now I think we're in the third week of training, maybe the fourth already. Time is flying, and it's been great. The boys in Gloucester are awesome. It's a great change room, even though I really love my time at Durham as well, which was a great team, a great change room to be part of. But I'm lucky to find another change room, which actually with a great bunch of guys. Which I think it's going to be a great 2 years and hopefully longer here in Bristol.
It will be. Let me just tell you right now, Paul, the Gloucestershire boys are absolutely fantastic. In fact, I think you're now our ninth guest from the county. So that says it all. They're a bunch of chatterboxes. That's why we love them on the County Cricket Podcast. They're always great, great value and a really tight-knit bunch of lads as well. There really is this family community sort of element when it comes to Gloucestershire County Cricket Club. So yeah, I don't have a bad word to say about them, to be completely honest. And first of all, congratulations on the deal as well, coming back into county cricket after 2021, because I have got the stats here from the Royal London One Day Cup in particular.
Yeah.
14 wickets at 22.14, Durham's second leading wicket taker in the competition, behind only Chris Rushworth. I mean, you had a very, very, very...
How many wickets did he get? Have you got that there?
I do. 17.
Yeah, but that's two games more.
Yes, it is, including a final. So that is very, very true, Paul.
To be honest, he I think he was the standout bowler for us that tournament. He's actually an awesome bloke to have in your team, and obviously a fantastic bowler. But even though we betted a lot in a lot of the games, and we got some very good totals because Clarkey got us off to a flyers and Lisi as well. Obviously scoring huge totals, but then him taking two or three wickets with the new ball, you know, that sort of any hope that probably the opposition team had, he sort of destroyed in that first power play. I think in the first three games, he took two or three wickets every single time. And then against Glossy, I don't think he took a wicket he took one wicket and it was a dropped catch. But he was so lethal with that new ball. And I think that's where I picked up my wickets in my second spell and towards the death. When guys had to go for it, but he just took wickets with a new ball and just get guys nicking and playing and missing and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, he was one of the reasons why we were so successful in that 50-over campaign. And why we probably should have deserved to win the game, but you know, sometimes a final can go either or, and unfortunately we couldn't get across the line. But I mean, I think until the final we played like a team that probably should have, the way we played until then, we probably should have won or deserved to win the thing. I'm sure a lot of Glamorgan fans don't agree with that, but from being inside, I think, you know, it was one of those campaigns that, you know, we should have almost won it, and it just unfortunately didn't turn out the way it turned out probably on the finals day. But that could have been a bit of final pressure or whatever it was. But it was a very enjoyable few weeks being part of that change room, and just the way we played cricket was unbelievable.
It most definitely was. Yeah, Durham were one of the standout teams in the competition. But then again, Glamorgan, as my Welsh co-host Lucy would say, if she was here on the podcast, did deserve to win on that final performance. You have to give them a lot of credit for that. Kieran Carlson, exactly. Leading from the front, outstanding. Yeah. Andrew Salter with a three for as well. Michael Hogan at the end as well, 40 years of age and still absolutely bossing the county circuit. Yeah. So it was a great final. I thoroughly enjoyed it as a neutral. Glamorgan winning their first trophy since 2004 as well. So that was a massive, massive moment for the county. Mm. On the other hand, though, I still think they gave an excellent account of themselves. I have to give Durham a lot of credit as well. Alex Lees, Graham Clark, those two throughout the entire tournament, different level. Really, really outstanding at the top of the order. So who knows, 2022, we'll have to wait and see. But I think those two teams, potentially, who knows, could be back in the mix. I mean, we've had some
interesting moves. It will be Gloucestershire this year.
And I'll say Warwickshire as well. We'll get our bias out in the pod now. But talking of Gloss then, Paul, just before we wrap up today's episode then, because I have actually been going on for almost an hour now on today's episode. But in terms of the club itself, what are your future aspirations with the South Western County? I'm guessing silverware. I'm guessing you may have some individual milestones and accolades that you want to pick up as well. But heading into those next 2 years, what do you really want to achieve in the game with Gloucestershire County Cricket Club?
I think obviously there's a new coach coming in, which sounds like they're pretty close to signing. We've got Stephen Snell coming in as a high performance director, or however they call it. I don't know exactly what they've called it. And I think if you look at the way Gloss have performed over the last 2 years, they are on a very good climb. And, you know, I want to be part of I want to be part of the growth and hopefully can contribute to that growth of the club and the team. That's what I want to do. And hopefully not for just 2 years, but for years to come. And I know the club, I think, openly has set out some ambitious goals about winning a White Ball trophy and winning a Red Ball trophy in the next few years already. And, you know, I want to be part of hopefully ticking one of those boxes and contribute to a trophy. And I don't really care if that's in T20 cricket, 50-over cricket or 4-day cricket. But I was part of the squad, the Somerset squad that won the One Day Trophy in 2019 without actually playing a game. So, you know, it doesn't really feel like I've won a trophy yet here in the county circuit. So I would love to be part and contribute to winning a trophy. And if that comes with a record-breaking wicket spell or whatever it is, or a leading wicket taker or whatever that is, I don't really care. I just want to be part of winning trophies with Gloucester and at least be part of that growth and you know, hopefully get Gloucester in a very strong position in the next few years.
Well, Paul, it goes without saying, but we here at the County Cricket Podcast, obviously wishing both yourself and the club nothing but the very best of luck heading into not only next season, but the years beyond as well. As you said, a very, very exciting time down in Bristol. Some excellent young players, some experienced veterans as well in that outfit. It does seem to be a very, very exciting time if you are a member of the glorious Gloucesters. And Paul, I think that's a wonderful place to wrap up what's been a fascinating episode of the County Cricket Podcast today. I must admit, I've absolutely loved it. It's given me a great excuse to talk about all things Gloucestershire, Durham, Somerset, and of course, Dutch cricket as well. I do love speaking about associate cricket, so thanks for giving me the opportunity to do so, Paul. So just before we end today's episode, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
Guys, people can follow me on my social media. I'm sure there will be some quick score on there. And obviously my sponsor, M&H. See, now I've done it. But other than that, I'm always happy to talk about cricket. So, that's it.
Top man, Paul. Well, we'll leave the links to those in the podcast description. So for anyone out there, please do go and feel free to follow those links in the podcast description below. But that is pretty much it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.